the deepest, darkest grooves, to the backwoods swamp where you hit the bottom, from the inside of your casket to the fears lodged deep inside your subconscious. It's time for a big, scary show.
Hi, this is Virgil Franklin, Master of the Ether Muse, and this is the Big Scary Show.
This is Mark Strain with Bad Jack Productions, and you're listening to the Big Scary Show.
Hello, everybody. This is Jimmy Psycho, and you're listening to the Big Scary Show.
Hello, creeps. It's me,
John Kassir, the voice of
the Crypt Keeper. And you're listening to the Big Scary Show, the top podcast in the industry.
Hi, I'm Ricky Rackman from All Ridiculous Things That Have to Do with Rock and Roll, and you are listening for some reason to this Big Scary Show.
This is Wednesday 13, and you are listening to the Big Scary Show.
You're listening to the Big Scary Show with three big scary men and one that wears more makeup than I do.
This week on the Big Scary Show. Oh, what? What? Really? You think you should do the intro? Okay, well, all right, everybody. Nicodemus, the podcasting cat, wants to do the intro, so I'm going to turn on my handy-dandy cat-to-English application translator and have at it.
Hello, I am Nicodemus the Podcasting Cat, and you are listening to the Big Scary Show episode 107. My human, Storm, knows nothing about music, so I am going to tell you about the special treats we have in store for you. We have Badger at the Mad Monster Party interviewing musical talent Ricky Rackman in Wednesday 13. The unknown scare actor has an actor spotlight feature. Deadline News brings you the latest headlines and happenings in the industry. Storm rants about costume models in a haunt minute. The Round Table of Terror features haunt musicians Jimmy Psycho, Virgil Franklin, and Mark Strait joining the GA hosts in a discussion about music in the industry. Is it real or is it Memorex? You listen and decide. Jerry Vane brings us a selection from our roundtable guests to feature in music. We have the gruesome giveaway winner, and much more all this week. I'm so excited for this show, you would think it was laced with catnip. So this is Nicodemus the Podcasting Cat telling you not to go anywhere, as the Big Scary Show episode 107 is here to give you nightmares.
The eyes of the haunt world turn towards Columbus, Ohio as the Midwest Haunters Convention rolls into town June 10th through the 12th for another great year of vendors, classes, tours, and spooky fun. Take the pre-show tour to Indiana on Thursday the 9th and visit three excellent haunts never before offered on the MHC tour. Friday night, catch the Scaratorium for some thrills and chills. Visit the vendor floor on Saturday. Take advantage of all the classes and workshops you can and enjoy the best masquerade ball in the industry. Get all the information you need about MHC 2016 at MidwestHauntersConvention.com, and we'll see you in Columbus.
Scare Actors Spotlight.
Greetings, Haunters. The Unknown Scare Actor here. Well, I'm a little embarrassed to say that I've been so busy over the past couple of weeks that I did not get an opportunity to record a Scare Actor Spotlight. Now, I was joking around with the Lady of Darkness and suggested recording myself an interview with the Unknown Scare Actor. But I'm not going to put you through that. You guys know me. I'm the worst-kept secret in the haunt industry. So what I am going to do is put a call out to anybody that's a haunt actor that is going to the Midwest Haunters Convention in 2 weeks. Come by the Big Scary Show booth. Come find me. Let's do some recordings. Let's get you on Scare Actor Spotlight and have a little bit of fun. We'll see you in 2 weeks in Columbus at the Midwest Haunters Convention. And remember, listeners, if you're a scare actor who's interested in talking about what you do and how much you scare people, just drop me a line, usa@bigscaryshow.com, and we'll get you on the air.
The Jimmy Psycho Experiment, the Monsters Theme, Demo Lounge version, on the Big Scary Show.
Want to take your haunt to a new dimension of terror? Then let Dark Imaginings conjure up some ghoulish graphics and web design services for your home, haunt, or crypt. Since 2007, professional and home haunters alike have trusted our award-winning and dedicated skeleton crew to make their nightmares come true. Whether you need graphic design services, logos, websites, spooky visuals, or creepy changing portraits, we can help your business look its scary best. To see more of our products and services, drop by darkimaginings.com. Let us help you get ahead of your competition.
Greetings, mortals, and anything else listening. Welcome to the Big Scary Show's Deadline News.
We start out with some vendor news from Froggy's Fog regarding the Midwest Haunters Convention. Froggy's Fog is taking pre-orders for MHC. Order now and take advantage of all the great show specials and have guaranteed delivery in Columbus. There are two easy ways to pre-order your forms. Get shows, special pricing, guaranteed availability, and free delivery. Don't miss out. Pre-orders must be placed by midnight on Monday, June 6th, 2016. Number one, call us at 877-376-4499 extension 1 to place your order over the phone. We would love to talk and make sure you get exactly what you need. One of the Froggy's Fog crew will be more than happy to help take your order over the phone, get it entered in the system, and make sure it's waiting for you at the show. For faster, easier, and even more savings, number two, you can order at froggiesfog.com and use the coupon code MHC2016PRE in the discount code section of the shopping cart or at the bottom of section 3 of our super fast checkout. You'll receive the best prices of the year, free delivery to the show, and a receipt for your order immediately. Orders placed and not picked up at MHC will be contacted after the show to arrange shipping and payment for shipping charges. Not going to be able to make it to the show or worried about plane rides, carrying heavy boxes, or just want to make things easier? We've still got you covered. Use coupon code MHC2016 and take advantage of these sizable show discounts and get everything delivered right to your doorstep. Shipping fees may apply on certain items. Remember, pre-orders must be placed by midnight on Monday, June 6th. And visit froggiesfog.com for more info. We have some news from Kim's Crypt Haunted Mill in Spring Grove, Pennsylvania. Kim's Crypt Campout, June 25th. Do you dare take the challenge of this interactive scavenger hunt on 62 creepy wooded acres of insane monstrosity? You and your friends will have 13 hours in which to complete a series of tasks while creatures, monsters, and freaks detain, interact, and misguide you. Dinner, continental breakfast, s'mores over a campfire, and limited edition Kim's Crypt Campout t-shirt are included in the price. All-night entertainment also includes horror movies, games, and many more surprises. For more information, visit kimscrypt, that's with a K, .com, or call 717-873-0997. We have a little music news from Alice Cooper. Alice Cooper is at work on his next studio release, and so far is shaping up to be a bit of a killer album. Quote, "I've always liked the idea that Alice Cooper has always been a Detroit rock band," Cooper tells TheWeekender.com. "We've always been a hard rock band, guitar rock, and I'll never give that up. But every once in a while, though, there's just a flavor of what album do we want to go to here to give it that flavor. And it seems to be going towards the killer album. And I kind of go, that album, let's revisit the sound of that album and what we were kind of thinking. You can never go back and totally recapture it, but you can certainly look at the elements that made that album work the way it did. It's early in the writing process, but Cooper said in addition to its sound, what also might connect it to the next album to his old album Killer will be a mini reunion of the original Alice Cooper band on this album. I wrote 3 or 4 songs with Neil Smith and Mike Bruce, Cooper said, and so we worked together in Phoenix for about 2 weeks just writing songs and demoing songs. And you never know which ones are going to make the album, but I said, let's do that. Dennis Dunaway wrote 2 or 3 things. We haven't seen those yet, but I know Dennis has always written great stuff. It's fun to go back and work with guys you haven't worked with in a while. It's not trying to recapture your youth, it's trying to recapture a sound. And it's a very elusive sound. Those three musicians, along with guitarist Glenn Buxton, of course, played on the original Killer album, released in 1971. The album came on the heels of the early hit single I'm 18 from the previous album, Love It to Death, and included the song Under My Wheels, which has become a fan favorite. The Killer album, along with Cooper's next two albums, 1972's School's Out and 73's Billion Dollar Babies, are considered peak Cooper albums that not only established him as a major star, but also solidified his rowdy, garage-ish brand of hard rock. You can read the full story at www.theweekender.com. We have a little more music news from John Carpenter. Fresh off the release of his new album, Lost Themes 2, horror master John Carpenter is gearing up to embark on an epic tour both stateside and abroad, and we have been absolutely loving the resurgence of his music career. What's next from Carpenter? Well, let's just say your ears are about to be real happy. As reported by Fangoria, Carpenter will soon unload 2 12-inch vinyl albums featuring brand new re-recordings of his most iconic movie themes. Hitting shelves on June 17th, courtesy of Sacred Bones Records, the first EP will feature full band re-recordings of the themes for Halloween and Escape from New York, while the second will breathe new life into the themes for Assault on Precinct 13 and The Fog. Each double A-sided record will be available in deluxe limited edition Mylar mirror board sleeves and as picture discs. Special blue and red vinyl editions of these 12-inch records will be available exclusively at his live performances. Yet for those outside of the vinyl circle, don't fret, both records will be simultaneously released digitally via Sacred Bones on June 17th as well. You can catch a video for his full band re-recording of the Escape from New York theme on YouTube. We have even more music news from the band Gwar. The 7th annual Gwarbecue will be held on August 20th in beautiful Richmond, Virginia at historic Haddad's Lake. Gwar, of course, will be performing a full set of Murder and Mayhem, and now it pleases your intergalactic overlords to divulge the first round of bands that have been confirmed for this year's outrageous event. But that's not all, folks. As of last year, the celebration of all things Gwar has grown to include an entire weekend of debauchery. The B4BQ is once again scheduled to take place the day before the Gwarbecue at the National in Richmond, Virginia. The B4BQ will feature tons of killer bands, including the entire Raging Summer Slaughter 16 lineup. And as always, the B4BQ will include raffle drawings, giveaways, and more to occupy the hopes and dreams of every bohab. Check out GwarBQ.com for a list of those bands and up-to-the-minute details on Gwarbecue 2016. And stay tuned for the Gwarbecue ticket on sale date in early June, and hold your breath until your masters reveal the next group of bands in this year's lineup of Loud Legends. We have an update from The Scare Factor. The Scare Factor is still on the search for additional haunted attraction reviewers. This is a volunteer position, and although some haunts may provide a few comp tickets, we cannot guarantee that they will, since they are not required to do so. This can take a lot of time and writing during the Halloween season, depending on how many haunts you visit. If you're interested and have not worked for a haunted attraction in the last 6 months, have excellent writing skills, can remain as unbiased as possible, and love attending haunted attractions, please send an email to thescarefactor@yahoo.com, letting us know you're interested, and we can proceed from there. We currently have several teams on board, so we know there are people out there who don't actively haunt who are just as passionate about the industry as we are. Get more info at thescarefactor.com. And finally, an update from the Fright Nights Campout series. Fright Nights Camp Out is a complete 13-hour overnight summer camp experience that includes a cookout dinner and breakfast in the morning, camping games and sports, bonfire and marshmallow roast, provided tents, and outdoor horror movie screenings. As far as the nightmarish creatures and mad slashers that lurk in the woods beyond the safety of the campfire, prepare yourself for a full-contact horror experience unless you elect to put a tent in the Pansy Zone, which is a safe zone where you can take a break, watch a horror movie, and escape the terrors in the woods whenever you feel the need. Otherwise, you can choose the Blood Tent Zone, which is a community camping area where you can share the bloody assault with your fellow campers, or the dreaded Guts Tent Package, which gives you a tent in the most secluded area of the woods for the most horrific experience possible. Just an FYI, it's likely your tent will be chainsawed in half before sunrise, no matter which location you choose. Go to FrightNightsCampOut.com for more information.
Remember, folks, if you have news about the haunt, horror, or Halloween industry, please send it to us at news@BigScaryShow.com, and we'll get it on the air. No news is too big or too small. This concludes this edition of the Big Scary Show's Deadline News.
Do you want online ticketing but get scared by service fees? HauntPay is scary simple ticketing and payments for your haunted attraction. With features made for haunts, including timed ticketing and repeat time slots, variable ticket types, bundled and combo tickets, social media discounts, and more, HauntPay is designed with haunted attractions in mind. Check them out at HauntPay.com and start now for free.
Hello, everyone. Drew Badger. We are live at the Mad Monster Party in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're chatting with all the cool folks. They don't get much cooler than this. Big fan of this guy. Big musical influence. Been on our show. Music is played on our show. One of the spookiest and scariest guys in the music industry, Mr. Wednesday 13. How you doing, man?
I'm doing wonderful.
Now we.
Do I sound like it?
No, you sound like a little tired. I know the con's great. You've had a lot of people coming up, and I'm sure there was a little bit of late night things going on as well.
Always, but I've been talking all day, so my voice is starting to sound like I'm really deep now. So.
Sounds great. You can always do that bass project you've always wanted to do. But we announced. I know that you were just doing an English tour with just basically you and a guitar and another guy with a guitar. How did that turn out?
It's great, man. It's the second time I've taken that overseas. I tried it 2 years ago, and I put out a record called Undead Unplugged, and that's what the show is called. It's called the Undead Unplugged Shows, and it's totally different. It's just like two hours, 15 minutes. It's just kind of storytelling, and I play certain songs, and it's fun. I take questions, I tell stories, and it's a really cool interactive way to actually talk and communicate with your fans. I mean, if I could have... When I was a kid, if I could have went and seen Alice Cooper in a small venue and him tell stories and take questions, that would have blew my mind. So I'm able to do that because I'm on a small scale, and you know, it's cool. It's totally different than our full band shows.
I was going to say when it comes to the full band, you've got such the high energy, the power, the lights, the rock and roll as they call it. But yet this is just a little more intimate venue. Obviously, the logistics are probably easier acoustic. But which do you prefer? Do you like that intimate setting where you're talking with the interaction, or do you like the big "Hello, Cleveland" kind of thing where it's just all rock and roll?
I think it's necessary for me at this point to have both. I wouldn't want to do a whole year of doing acoustic shows. You know what I mean? But so I'm able to split it up now, where I can. It is such a different show that you know I could do more tours this way. I can go into different territories because. They go, oh, well, it's not the normal band tour because it brings different people out and it's a different kind of vibe. But I'm learning so much from doing this. I mean, it really is bare bones. It's just me and my guitarist, and there's no drums, there's nothing else. And I mean, it's so quiet in the venue. Like our London show was like 400 people, and it was just they were quiet, you know. But it has to work that way. But it's fun, man. But it's totally different, and I think they're necessary for me at this point to have both.
It's so unlike to hear a quiet Wednesday 13 show. I got to think about that for a minute.
It works. That's what everyone says that comes to that show. I walk in, I don't know what to expect, and they walk away. Usually, I've had fans tell me they've seen me 15 times, and the acoustic show was the best show they've ever seen.
Are there songs that you would not play acoustically just because they wouldn't work, or are there select songs that you would only play at this point acoustically and not play with the full band?
Yes, a little bit of both.
Well, next question.
There's a few songs. I mean, obviously, like some of the heavier stuff, like especially off the new album, some of those songs just they're not going to translate acoustically. But how it like there's several songs. There is songs on the record that can, and like I have so many releases, we could pick a 25 song set list over 20 years, and you know, and find 25 songs that can fit.
Oh, sure.
You know, and. So they don't all work, but the ones that we have picked actually surprisingly work really well. You know?
Are you throwing any Bourbon Crow or Gunfire 76 or anything like that in there?
We do a couple Bourbon Crow songs, but not a. We haven't did any Gunfire yet. I was actually thinking about that last time we just did the acoustic run. We might work a couple of Gunfire songs in. So.
You mentioned the new album. How's everything going with the latest release?
It's doing well. I'm really proud of this record just because it was just. It's, I think, one of the best sounding records I've put out, like just sonically, and I don't know, I put a lot of work into it. And that's just me. It sounds like just shows the progression of the band. It was a big step up from Dixie Dead, and especially the sound was a lot heavier. And it was a concept record. And I wasn't really singing about my normal monsters and zombies and stuff. This was about aliens and conspiracy theories. And surprisingly, the fans loved it. And what they've told me is it's their favorite since Transylvania. So the first one. So yeah, it's been great, and I released it on two different album covers, and actually I think in 2 weeks, Record Store Day in the UK is releasing Monsters of the Universe with the actual CD cover. So it's like now you have like there's four versions of the album. So if you're a collector, you gotta
buy four.
There you go, yeah. So
and you've got it out of colored vinyl and everything. How's fans doing that versus you know everybody's downloading these things nowadays, but vinyl does seem to be making a bit of a comeback.
Yeah, I think a lot of people that buy the vinyl don't even listen to it. It's just a cool collectible thing, and you can see a bigger picture of it. That's something I've always done with my packaging and everything, period. I just, you know, there is so much downloading and things like that. I make it special, or at least I try to make my packaging special where it is worth going out and getting the physical product, you know. I mean, there's certain bands that I listen to. I'll go on iTunes and download it, and then I'll still buy the physical copy on vinyl and CD if I like the band. You know, that's just kind of the fan that I am, and I think a lot of my fans are like that. So,
and you are getting ready to head out on a sort of a mini West Coast swing with the full band, is that correct?
Before that, we go to Australia. April 11th, we have 3 shows in Australia, and then we head to the States May 5th through June 5th, and it starts in Spokane, Washington. We're just down the West Coast, up to the Midwest, Texas. We're busy for that, and then take the summer off to record, and then we're back out September, October in the States, doing East Coast. We'll be through here in North Carolina then, and then go to England for Halloween weekend.
I was going to ask, where's your Halloween show this year?
I haven't announced it yet, and I can't announce it yet, but we are playing Halloween night in the States.
Ooh.
So, but we're doing Halloween weekend in the UK, and that's the 10th anniversary of Fang Bang. We plan that in its entirety. So, and then at the end of the year, I'm planning to do an Undead Unplugged acoustic tour in the States. So I've got a full year booked.
Is that going to be all over the States, or is it just going to be in small areas?
I don't know if I'll be able to do a full run. Like, I like to break my tours up into a few weeks at a time. Going out for 8 or 9 weeks to me is exhausting and just, you know, financially exhausting.
Okay. Sure.
So, I'm not quite sure where we'll do it at. I guess we'll put the word out and see where the promoters want it at. You know, that's all I do is have my agent reach out to places, and if they want the show, I'll take it, and I guess I'll go where I can. So, I've got my whole year pretty much planned out, which is an awesome problem. And, you know, and then this time next year, we'll be here probably talking about a new album.
Any more convention appearances before you head out on the road?
I'm actually playing Mad Monster in May in Arizona, and the full band is performing there.
Oh,
so,
nice.
So it'll be the first time we actually got to. I've been wanting to do it for years, been wanting to play here, but, financially, it just didn't make sense. My band's scattered all over the U.S. So for us to get here just to do a one-off didn't work out. But we're
Acoustic Undead here,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, maybe next time.
Okay.
So, but it just happened to work out. We were going through Arizona right the day that Mad Monster was happening. So I was like, we got to play it. So we made it happen.
So for people interested in the new release, going to Australia, play a few dates, heading back to the U.S., doing the West Coast, swinging up through the Midwest, all the cool things, Wednesday 13, tour dates, tickets, merchandise, everything like that. How can they get more information with the websites and the social medias, etc.?
I mean, I have the basic stuff. You know, I got my Facebook and Twitter and stuff. But my main website is officialwednesday13.com. And I've got links to everything on my pages, links to my store, which all my merch, which same merch I have here at Mad Monster. I have tons more on my store, and it's all exclusive. I mail it out myself, so nice. You get packages delivered. I mean, mailman delivers it, but I take it to the mailman, so I pack it all up, and I'm the one man managing band now, so I do everything myself these days. So
always a pleasure to have you here on a Mad Monster. On a somber note, condolences. A former drummer of yours passed away a few days ago, Scabs, and he was with you in a former band many, many years ago, but he was great. I think I caught him one time with the Frankenstein Drag Queens back in like the early 2000s or so. But a great, great guy, and our condolences to you.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Yeah, Dave was a great guy. He played on he was the last era of the Drag Queens. You know, he played on the last two albums, and Dave just opened my brain up to a different style of play, and he definitely had a John Bonham, this four on the floor feel to his play, and I never had played with guys like that, and I don't know, I guess he kind of changed my style, and I think the music kind of got heavier and stuff as we started playing with him. So again, I haven't been in touch with him in quite some time, but again, you never want to hear something like that. So it's just sad.
It's been a bad year for musicians all around so far.
Yeah, man, it's just I haven't stopped thinking about David Bowie. It's just that's still just
Bowie and yeah. Bowie and man. James Jamerson Jr. just died.
Wow.
It's been a rough one. So.
Yeah, I turned 40 this year. Time's ticking by.
Hush, youngin, you got nothing going. 40s are great. Anyway.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Once again, Wednesday 13. Go to officialwednesday13.com for everything for the man who sings about the evils and the spookies and the aliens and the conspiracy theories. Always a pleasure to have you here on Mad Monster.
Thank you very much.
For the Big Scary Show, my name is Drew Badger, and we are out. And ladies and gentlemen, let's see if we can give away a prize. If you've been listening to the show for the month of May, you know what it is. Hopefully, it's the Gruesome Giveaway, sponsored by Screamline Studios. You know, we asked a question in the last show. The answer was in the show. And we picked a random entrant to see whether or not they're going to be the winner. Random entrant, what is your name? Where are you located?
Hi, I'm Deborah, and I'm in Hickory, North Carolina.
Hickory, North Carolina, about 45 minutes up the road from me. Very, very cool. Deborah, hope you're doing well.
I'm doing awesome. I hope you're well today, too.
We're trying. It might make your day a little bit more awesomer in just a second here. I do need to ask you a couple of legal questions to see if, everything was done all high and mighty and proper and everything. Question number one, have we called you in any way, shape, or form other than to tell you when we needed to talk to you?
No, you haven't.
And number two, have you tried to bribe us in any way, shape, or form to increase your chances of winning?
No, I haven't.
All right, Deborah from Hickory, North Carolina. For the May Gruesome Giveaway, if you know the answer to this question, who did the kilted creature first play for?
Was it Julia Adams?
You are absolutely correct. He did make his first performance in front of Julia Adams from The Creature from the Black Lagoon. Hence, he's the kilted creature. Congratulations, Deborah from Hickory, North Carolina. Deborah, do you work at a haunted attraction up that way or anything like that? Yard Haunt or any of that?
I do not know.
But you're just a big Halloween fan.
Absolutely. I love anything horror.
Well, there you go. You get your chance now to get a great prize, courtesy of Screamline Studios. Deborah, if you'll hang on the line for just a second, we'll get some shipping information to you. And once again, reminding everybody out there, go to ScreamlineStudios.com, check out their line of really cool stuff, and maybe next month you could be a winner, just like Deborah from Hickory, here on The Big Scary Show. And ladies and gentlemen, of course, that music does signify one and one thing only. It is time for the Roundtable of Terror. If you're a fairly new listener, you may not know that that music signifying the Roundtable of Terror is composed by one Mr. Virgil Franklin, who just happens to be one of a myriad of guests we have on the show tonight. That's right, folks. It's one of our semi-annual music shows, grabbing a few people who compose music for the haunt industry, plus a lot of other different things. And we're going to talk a little bit about music. Actually, we'll probably talk a lot about music and some other things in this Roundtable of Terror. Want to go straight to the guests. The aforementioned Virgil Franklin, been on our show several times, good friend of the show up in Linton, Indiana. Virgil, you are with us, correct?
Absolutely.
And a brand new Skype user, in fact, so welcome to the to that. Also, in Pittsburgh, PA, Mark Strait from Bad Jack. Bad Jack has been on our show as a vendor before and an interview or two with them, but did not know they composed music. But Mark, you are there in Pittsburgh, correct?
Yep.
Great to have you on the show. And of course, also friend of the show, loves to listen to us when he goes on those very long road trips all the way in Los Angeles, Mr. none other than Jimmy Psycho. How you doing, man?
I'm good. And dude, what a voice you have, man.
Noteworthy.
That's noteworthy. You need to come out here and do some voiceover work.
I would be honored to do that. We'll talk after this is over. But anyway, of course, we are joined by our bevy of hosts as well, including Storm.
Greetings from Rhode Island, where I'm still waiting for spring.
The unknown scare actor.
Badger actually uses a voice changer for all of his work.
Columbo sounds like this.
Oh, God dang it. There goes my secret shame. Way out in the high deserts of Las Vegas, we have the unknown, the haunt rocker, the unknown haunt rocker, Jerry Vane, or hauntstrumentalist, if you please.
In the newly relocated Vane One Music with no internet.
Oh, we gotta love that. My name is Drew Badger. Really talking like this in Charlotte, North Carolina.
No, you're talking like this. Jesus Christ.
Spring hit in full force today, where we finally broke 80 for the first time in about 2 weeks. But gentlemen, welcome to the Big Scary Show's music show. Let's start with Virgil. Virgil, you've been a guest on our show quite a bit. We've got some new stuff in the works from what I understand from you.
Yeah, you know, I can't quit writing. So it's
you did retire at one point a couple of years ago.
I did actually retire for 2 months, and I'll just speak that really quickly. Long the short of it is that I developed a really nasty, messy situation with some nerves in my shoulders, which wiped out my hands. I couldn't feel them. It's kind of hard to play anything when you can't feel it. Within a span of 2 months from retirement, we found a specialist. He found the problem. He fixed it, and voila, I'm back. So I'm not playing baseball again. Never again.
We appreciate that. I've seen you try to run around bases, and boy, that's
it's not a pretty thing.
No. Yeah, I think it's just those little short shorts with the belt buckles built into them that gym teachers used to always wear. I don't know.
That was my secret. But anyway, so yeah, I got a few things in the works right now, doing a lot of film work, a lot of teaching because I'm a professor at the university doing audio recording, and so busy, busy, busy.
And you've got new music coming up, which we'll talk about in just a few minutes. Mark, tell us a little bit about your musical background here up in Pittsburgh with Bad Jack.
So I'm a classically trained orchestra composer, but I don't actually do much orchestra composition for the haunt industry. I mainly specialize in sound design, ambient effects, all that good stuff, mainly because I've been an actor. I was an actor for probably like 13 years before I started even like doing music for anyone. But I went to school over in Hollywood, and right after that, I came back home and started working on haunt stuff because it's always been a passion.
So, now, were you a like actor, or were you a haunted house actor?
I was a haunted house actor. I was a haunted house actor at a charity haunt called Igor's Fright Shack for a really long time. And then whenever that shut down, I moved over to Rich's Fright Farm. And I stayed with them for several years before I went to college. And then after I went to college, I came back pretty much month or two afterwards, and I started doing their original scoring.
Did you just say, the music here sucks, I think I could do a better job, and that's how you started doing it?
No, it was I was getting interviewed to be one of the scene designers, like one of the creative directors, not a creative director, but like one of the assistants. I have no idea how to describe it. But I was getting interviewed for that, and I was with Rich Geisinger of Bad Jack Productions, and him, Carrie, and everyone. And I mentioned that I did music, and they were like, "Oh, you should definitely do that instead." And that was a much better decision.
Really cool. Sounds very interesting. And again, I love the products that Bad Jack makes. Love their cool stuff. So, you know, we don't have to talk about that if we're going to talk music, but I digress. Anyway, Jimmy, back out in L.A. I saw you last time, I think, at Scare L.A. last summer playing a little tiki music. We've also had you talking about Black Goat Uprising, which is a little bit, shall we say, darker than tiki music. What's going on with you?
Oh man, I'm always up something wacky out here, but the lounge music keeps me super busy. You know, there'll probably be another one of those lounge records coming out here sometime on the horizon. And Psychocharger actually reared its ugly head in January, February, and March. We played out there at Horror Hound back in March.
Yeah, it's Wicked Wendy was saying she caught your show.
Yes. I think she actually smooched me during the set, actually. I think I might have leaned over and gave her a little smooch. I hope her boyfriend isn't listening or anything like that. I don't want any trouble right now.
I don't think you'll have any issues with that because she's single.
Sweet girl, though. Sweet girl. And what else? And then, I have the standing gig out here with the Star Girls Star Wars parody burlesque thing. I now have a thing called the Sith Fits, which is kind of like punk rock meets Star Wars meets Weird Al Yankovic. It's kind of like all your favorite classic punk rock songs, but with Star Wars lyrics, and we do the whole makeup to look like Darth Maul kind of thing, so it's pretty wacky.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You just check out Sith Fits Band, SithFitsBand.com, and that's a lot of fun. And then, you know, I kind of had some time, some downtime, so I'm like going, you know, maybe it's time to do another Black Goat Uprising release. So I'm working on some that new stuff as well. So always something going on. You know how it is. You guys know how it is. You just can't sit still, right? I mean, you always got all these ideas. You got to work them out somehow.
I wish I could not sit still. That's why I'm so freaking fat at the moment.
I would love to have time to sit down and actually write.
Right? That's the hardest part, I think. You know, you get all these ideas in your head, and you know, if you can't get them out, then you know, it's almost like it's almost like being a blue ball, you know?
Yeah,
that's a good way of putting it.
I turned down. I had to put a hold on a lot of the commission work that I did because I've been wanting to make my own album that isn't affiliated with Haunt stuff. And just do an actual orchestra album because I haven't actually worked with orchestra in a long time outside of video games. So yeah, I purposely was like, okay, I'm only going to take a couple of projects, and then I took on way too many anyways. So all of my albums are now getting delayed, and it's going to be an interesting year.
Yeah, I understand that. Took on working with three bands, and because of the rotating schedules with each one, the new CD I was working on, I got a song and a half started, and that's as far as it got.
Yeah,
because every week, okay, you have to learn these songs, learn these songs, learn these songs on top of your day job. And we were talking offline earlier. In the last 2.5 weeks, I've worked with all three bands, multiple gigs for each one, and I'm literally sitting here, you know, looking at my list of song titles for the next CD going, I'll get to you eventually.
Yeah, not a lot of time for sleeping, for sure.
Wait a minute, what's that?
Yeah, right?
That's what non-rock stars do, Gary.
I should have an endorsement with 5-hour energy shots.
It's still super cool. Yeah, right? You get to work with live music. I'm definitely jealous about that. That's real cool.
It's fun, But each band is a completely different style of music, and I found myself at two of the shows starting to play the songs of what I did with one of the other bands, and realizing I'm playing the wrong damn song with the wrong damn band. Because your brain just went, you know, you're my head's mush.
Mm-hmm. Please tell me you're doing mariachi metal with one of them.
No, but if Doobie Brothers and Janis Joplin count, you know, to go from Doobie Brothers and Janis Joplin to POD, System of a Down, and Korn, and then jump back and doing Dio and Judas Priest, all in a week with three different bands. Yeah, it might.
That's a workload, fully.
Just slightly.
Yeah, that's quite a shift.
I had to learn 130 songs in a week and a half between three different bands.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. Thank God I have 10 guitars because every single one of them got used.
But yeah, that's how you're out in Vegas, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because that's how it is. The first drummer for Psychocharger that was playing out here, and he also played congas in the lounge band with me. But he moved out to Vegas, and he's a drummer, and he was telling me he has to know, he does like, you know, heavy metal karaoke. He gets all these gigs. But he says, dude, he plays like 400 different songs like in a month. He said he's just like the playlist is just insane. You have to know everything.
Yep, because some of these people will pull out the most obscure shit, and you have to know it.
And you have to be on it, exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have to commend you, sir. It's not an easy job.
Trust me, you have no idea how much I wish that I would love to be able to just sit down and just not have to learn songs and work on the CD. I would love to get the new album done, because I've got a digital recorder full of ideas. I just have not had time to put them together.
Nope, I feel you.
Anyway.
That does bring up go ahead.
You go ahead. My question can wait. Go ahead, Drew.
No, go ahead. I've been doing a lot of talking.
This is going to take a slightly different tack with you guys. And I listened to you guys talk about composition and playing and all this stuff. I'm a musician, not to the extent you guys are. I played trumpet and a little bit of bass guitar. But how many different instruments do each of you play?
All of them. I play 14.
Jimmy plays banjo. I know that.
Okay. Yeah,
we're going to exclude skin flute, hanging sax, and male organ. Leave those out.
Okay, then I play pipe.
Then he's only down to 11.
Yeah.
Let's.
Okay, anyway,
let's start with Mark. Mark, how many instruments do you play?
14.
Yep. And Jimmy, how about you?
Oh wow! I don't even really know if I play any of them. To tell you the truth, I just kind of do my own thing. But guitar, bass. Recently took up the banjo about a year or so ago, and that's a whole other animal. And then with the lounge tiki thing, you learn to play the ukulele, so, and some keyboards here and there. So whatever that is, 5, 6, I guess maybe.
Okay. And Virgil?
Well, let's see here. I was a band
tambourine
director.
Count?
That does count.
It's actually easier to say what I don't play well. And that's not egotistical. I was the band director, and when you're a band director, you're forced at gunpoint to play every instrument known to mankind.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So coming from that background, went to Indiana State University and got that degree, so you learn them all. And it really comes in handy because the more instruments that you play, even if you're doing a synthetic composition, using a string patch or something like that, it's intuitive. You almost sense how, because tactfully how that instrument is to be played and how you perform on it. So when you use an actual patch on a synthesizer, your approach is more from the standpoint of saying, okay, I know how that should sound, and then you adjust your performance methods on the keyboard to kind of make that patch sound more like it should really sound. So I don't play violin tremendously well because I just don't, but pretty much just about everything else. And I try to take up something new. Every couple of years, I try to pick up another instrument, and just so I keep myself humble and remember what it was like to learn.
Now that's cool, man. Very cool.
One of the things that's interesting about, like, you saying that you've, like, played so many different ones, I think it's really cool that, like, with you having a background of so many different instruments, that, like, basically being the band director, have you noticed that, like, your whatever dominant instrument you choose for a track, like, that's the one you want to highlight, you notice that your writing style has changed a lot?
Like, absolutely. Yeah. And the other thing is that you suffer from something called home instrument bias.
Yeah.
You know, I trained as a classical trumpet player. I toured, you know, through Europe when I was a junior in high school and on, you know, so it's like, you know, I have a necessity for making sure that if I use brass samples, that they really, really are really great brass samples, because if not, it's just like, you know, there's that missing element, that X factor, if you will.
I have to agree with you on that, because, like, on the last lounge record, I was looking to use some horn sounds, and there's not a lot of great horn sounds out there. I don't play that. You know, I was trying to – what's that?
East-West Audio has really great horns.
Oh, yeah, okay. Absolutely. And I'll throw a plug in there. Wallander, I use wind controller on a lot of stuff, which is not something – it's not a thick pair of shorts. I've used the EVI electronic valve instrument for a long time, and I use the Levy set that Wallander puts out there, and they just have tremendous, just very intuitive sound. Like, I can fool myself. It's that good.
Right on. Oh, nice. Okay. Good. Yeah, I'll write that down.
The other one that I had a lot of problems with finding good like virtual sounds for was drums, until I found Drums of War. And that's what they use on Game of Thrones. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'm definitely using that.
Well, Virgil's in the studio if you want to borrow it.
Virgil's actually the one that recommended me using Beta Monkey Music drum libraries for what I use.
Oh, cool.
So I've been using that since Damnation's Embrace, the first CD. And I agree with you what you were saying about your approach to different instruments when you're using the synth. I used a lot of violin and cello on Circus of Nightmares, and I found myself totally having to change how I play by doing that, because I like you said, you hear it in your head, and you can't just play it like you would normally play with, you know, a regular instrument. So yeah, you definitely, your mind frame and your mindset of what you want to sound like definitely changes per the instrument you're trying to create.
Well, I do want to take a quick second here just to remind everybody you are listening to the Roundtable of Terror Music Edition here on the Big Scary Show. We need to take a very quick break, pay some bills, listen to our fine sponsor, Necrotic Creations, fine sponsor of the Roundtable of Terror. We'll be right back.
You know how it is. You're alone. There's the internet. You start clicking. You're looking for something necrotic. Some things you see, your grandmother wouldn't call necrotic. Click on some other sites. Whoa, that is just way, way too necrotic. But then you find Necrotic Creations. Necrotic. You may not know what necrotic means, but you know it when you see it. Get necrotic. Necrotic Creations. Shop anytime at necroticcreations.com.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Roundtable of Terror with Virgil Franklin, Mark Strait, and Jimmy Psycho, talking all kinds of different great music, different types of stuff all around. Jerry being the music guy on our show, I'm kind of letting him throw some questions out there. Jerry, take it away.
All right. Let's see. I know, Virgil, you have done some film work as far as scoring and all that, but what do you guys find to be more harder to do, film score work or the regular album work, and what helps motivates and inspire you to get your ideas out for creating sound scores?
That's a good question.
Let's start with Mark.
Actually, if I can, I'd like to say, like, video games are actually probably the more difficult one for me, because that's the one I mainly work in. But I feel, like, really at home with the film. stuff because I did so many film studies in school that it just kind of feels natural to me. But like, even though I play way more video games than I should, there's always a lot of revisions with video games, whether it's like art direction, influencing the music, or just like, but like, just deadlines shifting. So that one's the one that always keeps me on my toes, and that's the one I kind of had to always be on guard about.
Well, I know that Dick Terhune's done some voice work in video games and things. Is that kind of the way of the future now for a lot of composers?
There's a lot more means to make video games now, but there's also, like, game audio there's a lot of people in game audio right now. Not saying that there isn't room for more people, but just the competition is a lot more fierce than it was whenever I first started.
How about you, Virgil?
Good question. Okay, so film scoring is more intuitive in the sense that, you know, you're looking at a piece of video and you're trying to reflect. It's not that you're trying to create something new and unique and interesting and trying to up your game or anything. All that stuff that goes into making a new Haunt album or writing a new piece, you know, that's a standalone piece, is not there as much. What you're trying to do is you're listening to a director and to a producer or two or three or five and trying to, you know, to write something that best reflects what the movie is about and tries to reinforce dialogue, reinforce the mood and the movement of and the tempo of the film. So really, that's to me a little easier because you if you have a good producer and a good director and a good DP and you're dealing with a lot of people that are giving you input, so it's almost you kind of get your hand held on it, and I'm okay with that because I'm there in a supportive role as a servant of the director and to the vision of the film. To write something from ground zero, in other words, I've got two albums coming up, to reflect what my brother said there, you know, the competition out there has grown immensely in all of the music world because everybody with a laptop computer and a copy of GarageBand is all of a sudden a composer.
Yep.
And that's not downplaying anybody here. I'm just saying in general, that's not necessarily a bad thing because competition breeds greater art, you know, and in a lot of ways. Kind of makes us all come into realization that we're not the only pony on the track and that we have to step up our game. So for me speaking, it's always harder going to the album first because I have to come up with something new and intriguing and something that I feel like is going to be different than what everyone else is offering, because I really don't want to sound like Midnight Syndicate. I have tremendous respect for Ed and Gavin and what they do, but I don't want to sound like them. I want to sound different, because people that are going to want something that sounds like Midnight Syndicate are going to buy Midnight Syndicate. I want them to have something unique to go to as an option that, you know, that's available to them. So it's always more difficult for me personally to go and write a new album.
Because it's like, you know, there are a lot of different artists out there, Verse 13, Shadow Symphony, Prelude to a Nightmare, you know, whatnot. And it's easy to get, you know, get lumped into, well, they sound like that or they sound like that. And I will say with your stuff definitely has a different vibe to it. I mean, there are always going to be comparisons, but I noticed with yours, whereas Midnight Syndicate tries to go for lush orchestral type stuff, you tend to go in a different direction where you're trying to capture that same feel, but do it in a different twist that, It's hard for me to explain because I understand what you're saying. As a musician, I hear what I hear the difference that you're trying to give it more of a different sound space compared to what other, what say Midnight Syndicate would do. You guys could literally be given the same piece of music. Here's music somebody wrote. Come up with something, and it would sound completely different.
And I think that's the kick. Is like, you know, the challenge for everybody who's sitting around this round table right now is to, if you're writing something that's original, is to find your own voice and sound like you. I had to giggle the other about 3 months ago. A friend of mine sent me a CD in the mail and said, "Hey, you gotta check this guy out." And I won't mention the name, but it's a person that's doing a lot of composition for the haunt industry. And she said, "Check this out." And I put on the first track, and I'm like, "And there's, gosh, he sounds like me." And oh gosh, that sounds like me. And I would have done that. So it kind of made me feel good in the sense that, you know, apparently I'm old and I've been around long enough that I'm getting a little bit of copying done. And that's, I'm okay with that because that's the greatest form of flattery. I copy the people I respect. So it's kind of cool if somebody thought, wow, Virgil, he did it this way. Let me do it that way. It's like, wow, that's really cool. I'm really impressed that somebody would think enough of anything that I've done to go, that's worthy of copying.
I don't see why anybody would even want to consider copying me.
I mean, I was a badass guitar player like you, man.
Dude, I'm lucky if I know how to tune it sometimes.
You have a Strat, Virgil. Come on now.
Yeah, you do have a Strat. You ain't done the faux Elvis. With Thurman.
When
I saw the title, faux Elvis with Thurman, I'm like, what, are you giving a Metamucil? What the hell is this?
Take twice a day, don't eat solid food, and you'll be fine.
And keep plenty of toilet paper around.
It's actually the sound you make when you have the relief. Ooh.
Anyway. Okay, Jimmy, what about you?
I haven't really written or scored a film per se. You know, like a lot of songs I write for films are mostly like just stuff that I've just have, like, you know, I'm working on, and somebody says, "Hey, can you write a song for my movie? Can you write a song for like this project I'm working on?" The only film I really ever really got asked to score was, and that's how that actually the Black Goat Uprising came about. This guy approached me and said, I'm making a film. It's going to be very David Lynch style. You know, I need something really atmospheric, abstract, something really heavy and out there. So really the Black Goat Uprising just kind of took on life of its own. It was just really a lot of it was just kind of improvising with me, but, you know, the guitars and looping sounds and whatnot. And so that actually came out pretty easy because I just kind of made a lot of mistakes and kind of trial and error my way through, but everything just kind of managed to fall in place. And like I said, other songs I've had in movies are really just like Psychocharger tunes, or I've been approached to write a song just for that movie. One thing I know when you're working with something for film, it really is more of a collaboration with other people. And it's like, you know, the director might have a vision, or the group of people that you're working with, they might have a vision, you have a vision. So you really have to find like that middle ground where everybody's kind of getting their voice in there. And you know how did you get X amount of people, it gets exponentially harder to find a sound if you get too many cooks in the kitchen, so to speak, you know? So with Psychocharger, though, it's usually just myself and maybe sometimes one other person. And I find that's actually a little bit easier to work with when you're doing, like, your own thing from the ground up. Because, you know, you always, like, are sketching out ideas, and it's just a lot easier to just kind of put together, I think, when you kind of have your own vision of what you want to do. You know, not that I don't like collaborating. I'm all about collaborating. You know, actually, we did that Pet Sematary song with my friend Josie. That was a whole collaboration of sorts, too. But, but that's kind of where I stand with it. Does that make any sense?
How about Storm? I know you've been a little quiet lately, and I know Hank Travis is probably just itching to get out there and start doing something. But any questions for the panels?
Well, yeah, we could go with Stardom and, you know, causing riots on Fremont Street when you wander down, which is more Hank Travis nature, which is my country western alter ego, and he remains quite that way. But, you know, one of the things that's come up in some of our roundtables in the haunt industry, you know, talking with makeup actors and stuff, there seems to, you know, usually be some element that gets overused. And one of the items, for example, when we talked makeup a few months ago, it's the zipper face costume and that aspect of makeup. Is there an element in haunt composing and haunt music nowadays that's just getting way overused? And when you see it, it just, you know, sends a little cringe. Let me throw that to Virgil first.
As much as I love orchestra, and I deeply, deeply, deeply love the sound of strings, but you know what? No.
Thank God someone else said it. Oh,
seriously. I come from a classically trained background. Blah, 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 2 degrees, IU, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is that at the end of the day, I mean, if it communicates what you're wanting to communicate, great. But, I mean, I've heard far too many people using really patty, crappy strings. And this is in movies, not just haunt music, but I just hear way too many strings. I think just orchestral writing for haunts is I'm not sure. And my God, I would be so egotistical to think that I have my thumb on the pulse of where haunt music is going today in a changing and dynamic society. But the bottom line is that I just like to hear a whole heck of a lot less orchestra. And by the way, can we get away from the synthesizers for a while and use actual real instruments for a change? Okay, I'm done.
I was just going to ask you that, if you could tell whether or not it was real strings or synthesized strings.
Oh, yeah.
Some samples, no. Some stuff is really, really super close, and a lot of it depends on the person playing it, on whether it sounds like crap or not, if it sounds like it's real or not, because, you can tell somebody's just sitting there plodding around the keyboard, wandering around and trying to find their sound. That sort of sounds like a string patch going on, and then you find somebody who's trying to play it more intuitively and actually try to play a string patch like a string player would play it. I don't know. It's fairly easy. And like I said, that whole home instrument bias thing where it's like I can spot a synthesized trumpet sound a mile and a half away.
Well, it's like with Circus of Nightmares, that was the first time I used strings and cellos and all that. And the reaction I got was mixed because previous albums, when I did strings and cellos, I used guitars, volume swells, and different sound settings on the guitar to get that feel across. But when I actually did it for Circus of Nightmares, half the people really liked it, and the other half said, "I'm copying Midnight Syndicate."
Well, it's because they set the standard. You know, I mean, look at where all this genre began for all of us. I mean,
right.
I mean, Midnight Syndicate set the bar and set it really, really super high. And how'd they do that? Well, they did that by creating symphonic music for haunts. So, of course, anybody who uses strings is automatically going to be saying, "Well, you're giving a nod to Midnight Syndicate." And I don't think it's not without precedent to say that, because I certainly did. So, I was thinking, gosh, this sounds like something Gavin and Ed might do. Definitely I would love to see us turn the corner, not get away from them necessarily, but definitely, turn the corner and do some more stuff that sounds, 21st century would be nice.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but, I think I'll go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think like that comes in with like a lot of genres too, like playing horror rock music, every band since 1982 wants to sound like the Misfits, and there's so many three chords and oh, whoa, 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 oh lyrics that you can tolerate, need to diversify it a little bit.
So going off of what you were saying about love of the orchestra setting, I think for me, whenever I was doing the newest album that I did was called Theophobia. And it was like basically I wanted to do something orchestral, but I did like that was like my biggest fear. I didn't want everyone to be like, "Oh, he's just doing stuff like Midnight Syndicate," because like I specialize, if you would call it a specialization, in ambient and especially with sound design, because it was like I make sound effects most of the time for like video games and stuff like that. So I incorporate most of the stuff I work with into sound design, and that's kind of like the niche that I've been trying to carve for myself. But man, whenever I was making Theophobia, I made a conscious decision to like use a lot of different like classical instruments, but I avoided like the gothic setting completely because I didn't want anyone to do the comparison. Like it's very strange because like I feel like it's like the comparisons are welcome because obviously like, whenever I first started as a composer, like it was because of Midnight Syndicate that I began like writing orchestra music and thinking that horror music was really cool. But holy crap, like it's always like you're treading water all the time, like or treading eggshells all the time, because you're thinking like, if I make something, I don't want to be taking someone else's niche. Because even if you love it, that you're always like, you're always afraid of being put into someone else's realm instead of your own. So it's a definite fear. But there's one thing I wish that would be able to stop forever is if I have to make one more clown room, I will fucking scream.
Hey, hand them my way.
Okay, gladly. Anytime someone commissions me for any type of like the clown rooms and stuff like that, I just want to die inside. I've made four different tracks of them, and that's four too many. I already, like, it's not that I don't like clowns, I just don't like clown music. It's like, sorry, it's like huge people.
No, that's all right.
So we're not going to hear Mark Strait's Carnival of Despair CD anytime soon.
The two of my first albums have two like carnival themes. That's it. Never again.
I think I've got like up until Circus of Nightmares, I had two carnival themed songs off, you know, spread between two, you know, with my first two albums had a carnival, you know, carnival theme to it, and then one song on the second album was a similar vein. Other than that, I stayed away from carnival stuff because, I mean, how many times do you have to hear one of them dun 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 dun, you know, laughing?
The weird.
I think I had clown laughing. I think I put clown laughing on one track, and I was like, okay, that's one track too many.
Yeah. What about I was recently at a wedding, and I've never been to a Polish wedding, and I heard like I saw a polka for the first time, and I was like, oh my god, it's circus music. What is happening? Like, I started freaking out. I was having an emotional breakdown because of circus music at a wedding.
I hope the videographer got that.
Send in the clowns. No!
Like, please get me off this planet right now.
I feel better right now because, you know, earlier I'm like, you know, wow, these guys are talking about being able to tell if it's real or if it's Memorex. I can't tell the difference between a harp and a harpsichord. But now I feel better if you thought Roll Out the Barrels was clown music. I'm feeling better about my inner musical set.
That's funny.
I just have the lowest, like everything that I hear that's not probably some other clown music, I apparently have like PTSD for it now or something. I don't know.
They have a pill for that.
Hey, speaking of composers, has anybody seen any John Carpenter's like live performance videos? He's not playing now with his band. He's playing his music with a full band live. You guys seen any of that yet?
We mentioned that in Deadline News just this very show. So
wow,
yeah, he's dropping a couple of vinyl albums featuring re-recordings of what, Escape from New York and Halloween, I believe.
Oh, yeah, he does They Live, Escape from New York, Christine.
Assault
the Fog, all that,
yeah,
all those tunes are now playing. He's playing them live. Yeah, I think he has like six other guys he's playing with. So it's a pretty beefy orchestra that he's got there.
Go catch that if you're nearby.
Fantastic retirement plan.
No kidding, right?
I mean, man, way to go, do it, John.
Oh well, he's there. I saw something today. Maybe what I saw might be in reference to what you guys are talking about. But there was something about him redoing Halloween.
Oh, yeah, I saw
A new version's coming out. Like, or just got announced.
Yeah, I saw that. Okay, then I did. That is what I saw.
Yes.
I'm like, well, you know, after what Rob Zombie did to it, it probably needs to fix it
somehow.
Somebody
needs to come back.
Someone needs to fix that. That huge mistake.
It needs to be resuscitated.
No, I got to say, the first Rob Zombie one, I did enjoy. I mean, I'm a fan of the original, but I did like Rob Zombie's first Halloween film. Second one, no.
Yeah.
That's kind of like I'm a huge Batman fan. Anything Joel Schumacher touched the Batman series, I wanted to kill myself.
I think like one of the one thing I did take away from the Rob Zombie's Halloween was that like he did a really good, he upscaled Michael Myers in a really good way. Like he made him mm-hmm. really threatening in a really positive way. But like everything after that, I was just kind of like, why?
Well, gentlemen, do you have any final questions for our guests? As the clock on the wall says, we're pushing 45 minutes at this point, so we need to start winding it down just a little bit.
You know, it's neat when we get a bunch of like-minded artists on the show. Is the conversation could go on, and so much is covered, and things we wouldn't even ask questions about get brought up, and you know, I always find these type of conversations compelling.
And the sad thing is, you know, we really haven't talked about all that much, too. We could do 5 shows with people who have conversations like this. This is always fascinating. Virgil, you brought up a really good question, and I guess this might be the kind of winding down a little bit. You said, where is haunt music going in a few years? In your opinions, all three of you, where do you think it's going to go? Is it going to go more synthesizer? Is it going to go more organic with like acoustic instruments? How do you think what people will be listening to in 5-10 years at their local haunted attraction?
Amish mariachi.
Oh, got it. Get on that, Jerry. We have been trying to get Jerry to do mariachi, metal mariachi for a long time, and to an Amish themed
mariachi.
Storm and I are designing an Amish-themed haunt to go with this.
For Groundhog's Day.
Oh, Lord.
you know, out here there is a metal mariachi band out here in L.A.
Yeah, Metalachi, isn't it?
Metalachi, that's them, yeah.
Yes,
my God.
They're fantastic.
Kind of like that metal Elvis we have that plays out here every now and then.
I like metal Elvis. I've seen him.
Yeah, it's got a Peter Criss drummer, and Nikki Six bass player / guitar player and Elvis on vocals.
God,
that's brilliant, man. I got to see that.
Fantastic.
Metalachi better be playing when I'm in Long Beach and Pasadena for Scare LA and Midsummer Scream.
When is that, by the way?
I'll be out there the 28th of July through August.
I'm actually going to be in Huntington Beach and Irvine in a couple weeks in June.
That's a
couple shows out there.
I'll be down there at the end of July. Midsummer Scream's the last weekend in July. Scare LA is like a week later. So I'm just staying on the West Coast and doing workshops. Unless I can freeload at Jimmy's place for a couple nights, we'll have to see about that. We'll talk here, babe. We'll do lunch. But,
a little pet in the backyard.
So where do you guys think music's going to be heading in the next few years as far as haunted attractions and or beyond, video games, etc.?
To some degree, it's going to be a crapshoot. Really, it's really going to be dictated on what happens with haunt. You know, where are the trends in haunt? And if you follow the trends in haunt, that's where the need for music is. It's the tail wagging the dog syndrome.
That brings up an interesting point with the giant preponderance of escape rooms out there.
Yes.
Have you guys been asked to score something for an escape room?
Yes.
Different is that from a haunt?
It's very different in the sense that it's more immersion sounding stuff. It really is. It's more immersive. It's more akin to sound design than it is actual composition. So, absolutely.
See, like, I love escape rooms just because, like, you get to, with haunt music, like, with working with the room, you have to always be at like a 10 level of intensity at all times because there's people that are going to come into a room every like 13 seconds or something,
right?
The speed of the room is. But with escape rooms, you get to like feel the tone out for yourself as it's happening. So you just get to be like, that's whenever it feels like you're composing for a real movie. And that kind of like brings up my point of, I think it's going to go toward more toward sound design, more aspects of like composition will be a side accent to everything else. Because if you look at the trends in haunted attractions, they slowly trail the trends that are in film. And right now in film, there's a more of a heavy focus in the horror industry specifically for big immersive soundscapes focused on sound design with big hits of orchestra.
And
So you have like these atmospheric tones that are like that are setting the immersion, sort of like in video games, like when you're playing Silent Hill, like you have these big empty soundscapes and makes these situations feel real. And then the orchestra is to elevate it, to take you out of like, this is reality that you're feeling because of this tone atmosphere, but this is bigger than reality because this score is here, and it's letting you know that like everything here is awful and you might die.
It's all gonna be the brown note. They're gonna break out the brown note.
Nice. And the yellow note.
And the yellow note, exactly.
I gotta ask you a chartreuse note.
we might need to end it on that one right there. Gentlemen, I do look at the clock here. It does look like we are winding down or need to wind down here. This is the part of the show we affectionately call the plugs, and I hate that we have to pull the plug on this conversation. We definitely will get each and every one of you back on the show in the future to talk more cool stuff like you guys are. This is where we get the chance to plug all your various ventures and upcoming releases and appearances and things. Mark, let's start with you. What's going on? You're going on the road. You putting anything out sometime for this season or beyond?
So I'm going to be at MHC. I'm going to be a vendor with Bad Jack. I'm going to be selling my 5 albums. And I'll also be at Chicago Frights. I'll be doing a lecture or a seminar, whichever. I'll be doing a seminar there, which is in July, I think.
And I think it's in July, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll be in Chicago Frights, and then I might be able to make an appearance at Scare LA. I'm really trying to, because I've heard it's awesome and it keeps getting better, and I miss being in LA because that's where I went to school, so I'm just like, I want to go back.
If you want to split a hotel room, let me know. It was kind of expensive out there.
From somebody who's
never been to LA before. Whoa.
Yeah, if I do go, I will definitely hit you up, because that would be real awesome, because like, I know I have a little bit of time, but not enough to justify it yet, so I might cancel one of my jobs for this. But yeah, like just those things, and then I'm working on an escape room themed album.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's cool. So is there a website where people can get more information or see stuff like that?
Yeah, so Bad Jack Productions has all of the Phobia series, which is where all my albums. Every album is centered around a certain phobia, and the newest ones are agoraphobia and theophobia, and all of them are available in download form or in physical form on badjackproductions.com.
Badjackproductions.com. Do you have a social media presence, like a Facebook or Twitter?
I have a Twitter that gets very unprofessional real fast. It's just at Mark with a C. It's like Mark with a Mark straight, Mark with a C. Wow.
Okay. Very nice. Jimmy, I know you've got a ton of stuff going on, including some upcoming Vegas appearances and things, so plug away.
Okay, so probably the day this thing, this show airs, I'll be in Las Vegas over Memorial Day weekend playing some spooky sci-fi punk rock lounge music at the Golden Tiki Saturday and Sunday night for the after parties for the punk rock bowling. And then I'll be just got booked to play with Elvira, so I'll see you guys at Scare LA. I'm be playing with Elvira at Scare LA, and then the lounge band will also be playing Tiki Oasis in which is a big weekender event in San Diego, and very appropriate. This year's theme is Party on Monster Island. So I'll be playing that with the two other guys. And working on a solo record. This is going to be a little more lo-fi, a little super low production, a little more bare bones. Got that coming up. The Black Goat Uprising is going to happen again throughout the course of next year. So just keep checking jimmypsycho.com. TheSithFits.com monthly gig with the Star Wars Burlesque show here in LA, which will also be traveling soon. So, and of course, PsychoCharger.com, the home base. So there you have it.
When are we going to see it? Go ahead.
With that, I want to announce now that this is the genesis of the next horror music supergroup right here. Let's get it started right here. I think we can pull it off.
and to add in, Golden Tiki is Haunt Rocker approved. That is my place. I go there constantly.
Jimmy, when are we going to see you at Heavy Rebel again?
I was really hoping it was going to be this year, but due to just all the stuff that's kind of come up, it probably won't be. I'm thinking maybe Elvis Fest will come back. Elvis Fest, geez, are we really looking at 2017 when we talk about that now?
Well, it is early January, so technically, yes.
Ooh-wee. So, yeah, so I'm
that's
hoping
where
this
you and I got our start. You were my very first interview on podcasting.
We've known each other for like the Holiday Inn.
The Holiday Inn in Chapel Hill. Oh, my God. How far or how low we have sunk since then.
Oh, my goodness.
Virgil, how about you? I know you got a lot of stuff going on. You've mentioned a couple of things coming down the pike. How can people get information and such?
Okay, so virgilfranklin.bandcamp.com. I like Bandcamp because I can offer everything and download in different formats for different people's needs.
No flute involved, right?
Huh? What?
Go ahead.
Exactly. Anyway, so the long and short of it is, there's an album that I dropped last Halloween called Halloween, which is really good. I did a side project that's, I think, might be Haunter approved at some level, which is I have a band called The Strange Ones, and it's hard to describe. Just go look it up. Very satirical rock and roll, odd sci-fi and stuff thrown in for good measure. Two new albums coming down the pike on the virgilfranklin.bandcamp.com site. One is called The Haunted, which is my nod to Miklos Rosa and Bernard Herrmann. So a lot of heavy-duty 50s, 60s sci-fi stuff with some theremin thrown in for good fun. And I'm sorry to say this, but yes, I am releasing a new clown album. It's called Carnival of Carnage. It's industrial death metal clown music.
So it doesn't sound like
that. I love it.
I am so getting that.
So dude, there you go.
You want me to throw down something on it? I'm there. I'm all over
I'm open for it, brother. Another collaboration is good.
If I ever get my damn internet working.
Well, guys, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you here talking music. We're definitely, as I say, going to have to get you guys back on the show to talk again. This is always a fun time, but I can't do it without my amazing co-hosts, including Storm.
Watch the industry in the fall as Hank Travis, country western superstar, will be putting out his own Halloween album, Hank Travis, A Halloween, featuring the hit single, Get Me My Zombie Shooting Boots.
What the
I am so looking forward to that.
Oh, thanks, Jerry. Now I have to bleep that.
It's PG-13. We're good.
I said sorry.
The unknown scare actor.
I'm going to have to go dust off my trumpet now.
That's what she said.
One size mouthpiece, baby.
Hey, 14A4.
Hey, you know.
The Haunster medalist, Jerry Vane.
I will be tentatively appearing at Fitzgerald in Huntington Beach on June 10th and the Irvine Fairgrounds on June 11th in Irvine. If anybody's interested, come with the band Smashing Alice, so come out and support.
Support your local music. That's what we always say here. My name is Drew Badger, and I'm just going to give you guys a bit of advice. If you really want to sell a bunch of albums, minor chords. That really gives you that really dark, dark sound that all the chicks dig. Anyway.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. Somebody's got to. My name is Drew Badger. Thanks to our co-hosts. Thanks to our guests here on the Roundtable of Terror on the Big Scary Show.
Do you hear that? The asylum is being overrun. It's time to go to Von Caron Productions and check out the Insane Ensemble. For those troublesome lunatics, they have the commitment coat, a straitjacket designed to keep them restrained. Or, if you're the doctor who likes to experiment, then the psychosurgical coat was made just for you. Go to Von Caron Productions, www.voncaron.com. That's V-O-N-C-H-A-R-O-N, Von Caron Productions. Get there before you, too, are infected by the madness.
Broadcasting to you from the darkest reaches of the earth, this is A Haunt Minute. And now, with this week's commentary, Storm.
Alright, so I want to take a moment and talk about an unsung hero. Yes, that's right. I want to talk about the Halloween costume model. This is an unsung hero within the haunt industry, within the Halloween industry itself. These are people who are showing these costumes and are appearing in catalogs, on the posters at your spirit, or whatever spooky happy Halloween shop shows up in September, and they're the ones on the piece of cardboard in the front of the plastic container containing the awful costume that they're selling. And these people do it. They do a hell of a job. They make these stupidest costumes look sexy, look like the life of the party, look like they're having fun. That, hey, the $59.95 I bought for this overpriced, awful costume is what I wanted. I am the life of the party. I have walked in. Hey, I want to be sexy swashbuckler? I'm sexy swashbuckler. Yeah. Hey, I'm the life of the party. I got this weird M&M costume. I'm rocking it. The ones I give the most credit to, the ones who I just absolutely have no idea how they get through it, are the crude Halloween costume ones, especially the guys. You know, the guy who's the snake charmer, you know, pretty racist costume, you know, got the turban, got the snake charmer clothes, and a big python hanging out from the crotch. This guy's rocking it like, dude, yeah, hey, I wore this at a party, and yeah, it's gonna get me chicks. Another favorite, the breathalyzer guy. Yep, wearing a big box with a breathalyzer tube at the crotch. It's going, blow here. Yeah, look at me. I'm rocking it. Douche level 5,000, but it is awesome, and these models are rocking it. Why? Because they do it, so you don't have to. Somebody's got to do it. They got to put groceries on the table. It's their job. They're making it work. Overpriced costumes, showing it off, and just... You give them credit because, you know, us in the industry and the costumes and things we do, we'd never do this in a million years. We wouldn't touch this. Hey, am I going to wear the fake He-Man muscle shirt? Wouldn't be caught dead in it. Am I going to wear the M&M packet thing? No. But these people are on the cover of those things, rocking it and showing, hey, I'm doing my job. And you know what? Then they're going to go put it in their profile because, well, they need to pay groceries next week. Give them credit. When you see those and you look and go, oh, what an awful costume, remember that model who's doing that job so you don't have to, and they're doing it well. So until next time, keep every minute scary.
Hi, this is Josh Gates from Travel Channel's Expedition Unknown, reminding you to send all hate mail to storm@bigscaryshow.com.
Tune in next episode for another Haunt Minute. And in the meantime, share your opinions on the Big Scary Show Facebook page and on Twitter at Big Scary Store.
Virgil Franklin, midnight has come on the Big Scary Show.
once again, Frighteners. Welcome once more to the Vicer's Haunted Vista. Here we all are, midway, and the summer is slowly creeping in. And I do mean slowly. We're getting low, still in the 30s? Brr. Well, Midwest Haunters Convention is mere weeks away, and my wife and I are looking forward to it as ever. If you see us lurking about, please feel free to walk up and say hello. We don't bite. Not hard, anyway. And as ever, the Big Scary Show will be in attendance as well. Be on the lookout for our booth. I know Drew will be there, as well as Jim, and I'll be manning the microphone a bit as well. And I'll be running around with the microphone and also at the booth from time to time, so drop in and say hello. Well, 2 years ago, loads of people were flocking to the theaters to see Legendary's much-anticipated, not to mention much-hyped, Garth Edwards-directed Godzilla. And, as fate would have it, the Big G is once again awash in media attention. The latest film from Toho, Godzilla Resurgence, is nearly upon us after a hiatus of 12 years, and not only did Legendary Pictures acquire the rights to do a King Kong movie, titled, at this point, Skull Island, but have announced that in 2020 we will finally be getting a fanboy's dream monster mash movie, a remake of King Kong vs. Godzilla. On the downside, Legendary Pictures Godzilla 2 has been pushed back from June of 2018 to March of 2019, and director Gareth Edwards has stepped down. His replacement is unknown at this point. However, the script is finalized and does include Rodan, Mothra, and King Ghidorah, and, if the rumors are true, Mechagodzilla as well. So stay tuned. So, with all of this in mind, I, at long last, fulfilling my long-overdue threat, am going to dive into the history of the 62-year-old franchise and discuss what makes him tick and his relevance to Haunters. As most of us are well aware, the 1954 original film was a metaphor for both the horrors of the bomb and the hopes of the Japanese people. Don't forget, this movie cropped up barely a decade after the 1945 bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and its original subtitled form is a pretty grim and somber viewing, with crowds of people dying during the beast's rampages. Oddly and ironically enough, when the film was imported to the United States and scenes with Raymond Burr were added to give it the tone of a more monster-on-the-loose type of film, it became widely popular over here. And there's the rub. At the end of the day, Godzilla is symbolic. He is us. I always had a hard time reconciling that and never quite understood why the character took off the way he did in this capacity, but what can you say? And by the way, Raymond Burr had some nifty dialogue in this film.
George, here in Tokyo, time has been turned back 2 million years. This is my report as it happens. A prehistoric monster the Japanese call Godzilla has just walked out of Tokyo Bay. He's as tall as a 30-story building. Now he's making his way toward the city's main line of defense. 300,000 volts of electricity strung around the city is a barrier. A barrier against Godzilla.
Classic stuff. The success of the original was so massive in Japan that a sequel was quickly put into production, and in 1955, Godzilla Raids Again, a.k.a. Godzilla's Counterattack, a.k.a. Gigantus the Fire Monster, hit theaters. This one, while nowhere near as grim as the original, or on the level of sophistication either, was the first to introduce the monster versus monster concept. Anguillas, Angurius, or Anzilla, who thought that one up, is introduced here, and the model work is as stellar as ever. The story focuses more on the survival spirit of the Japanese people, being an excellent counterpoint toward the original. Problem is, the film, being rushed, is pretty disjointed, and the fight scenes were filmed at too high a speed and look almost comical rather than awe-inspiring. It's still worth a look, though, for the positive message it holds and for the superb model work. At the end of the film, Godzilla is buried in ice, left there to remain in hibernation for the next 7 years. A little trivia here. When this film was originally sold to the U.S. distributors requested a new Godzilla and Anguillus suit for some footage they were going to shoot on their own. It was going to be titled The Volcano Monsters, but this never materialized. Do an internet search for a photograph of these monster suits. Pay special attention to the Godzilla suit. It's a foreshadowing of things to come.
Anyway, by this point, Toho had figured out that giant monsters meant giant profits. And in the ensuing years, we got Rodan, Varan the Unbelievable, The Mysterians, which featured a giant robot called Mogera, Mothra, we all know who that is, Frankenstein Conquers the World, which in addition to a gigantic Frankenstein monster, featured a huge beast called Baragon, and its sequel, War of the Gargantuas, which featured two gigantic Frankensteins. Godzilla finally reappeared in 1962, bursting forth from his icy prison in King Kong vs. Godzilla, a film which has a huge, long, and checkered history. Do the internet research, it's too long to get into here. Surprisingly enough, in terms of box office receipts, this is the biggest one of the entire series, bar none. Not sure why, because it essentially plays as a comedy, although the Americanized version tries to play it straight and it just doesn't work. You tell me where it's at. By 1964, Toho had enough successful monsters under the belt that they could start pairing them against each other, and this is what happens with Godzilla vs. Mothra, aka Godzilla vs. The Thing. This film is notable as it is the last time Godzilla is portrayed as an out-and-out villain, and it also features Godzilla's most popular look in terms of his suit. All the films that followed after this was where he became kind of an anti-hero to just a downright hero by the 1970s. Next film in particular, Ghidra the Three-Headed Monster, which also featured Rodan and Mothra, Godzilla starts as a menace and ends up as a protector of the planet, and it just goes downhill from there. There are exceptions. The sequel to this film, 1965's Monster Zero, considered the most mature, well-paced, and a major fan favorite is one, as is 1968's Destroy All Monsters, considered at the time to be the final Godzilla film, which brought together all of the beasts in Toho canon for one final monster mash. As it happens, the film made so much money that the series continued, but unfortunately, most of the output of the 1970s was notable mostly for the opponents that Godzilla faced, the Smog Monster, Gigan, Mechagodzilla, etc., etc., but essentially, the series had been reduced to Saturday afternoon matinee kiddie fare, and by 1975, with the terror of Mechagodzilla, although it did show improvement, it was a case of too little, too late, and by the end of the film, Godzilla wanders off into the sea, not to be seen again for another 10 years. Godzilla's return to Japan in 1984, a year later in this country, was met with great enthusiasm in his homeland, but a bit more subdued reaction here. Godzilla 1985 got a lukewarm reception at best, but it did mark the arrival of the second series, albeit with a slow start. The sequel, titled Godzilla vs. Biollante, based on a fan club submission, did not pop up for 4 years afterwards, but this is where things really started to happen again. Starting in 1991, Toho released one film per year, Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah, vs. Mothra, Mechagodzilla, Space Godzilla, and finally ended the run in 1995 with Godzilla vs. Destroyer, or as a friend of mine likes to say, Destroyer! For the record, King Ghidorah, Mechagodzilla, and Destroyer are the best of the lot. The rest are kind of hit and miss, but Destroyer in particular. Godzilla Dies ran the headline. This even made it to CNN. And in December 1995, Godzilla did indeed die, though with a little hook in there, just to make sure that the sequels could resume whenever Toho really wanted to. For my money, the 1990 series is probably the best. There's some wonderful effects for the time, some good story writing, and a certain fire and energy that is lacking from the 1960s and 70s output. With Godzilla retired for the time being, Toho launched a trio of films based around Mothra, which were more in line with children's fables more than anything else. And while there were some terrific ideas and Ghidorah featured in two of them, these films are not regarded all that highly today. Like I said, they're kiddie films. Check them out if you want to, but don't bring too many expectations. The less said about the Emmerich Devlin 1998 film, the better. Oh, the hell with it. I'm going to rant. Call it what you want. Fraudzilla, G-I-N-O, short for Godzilla in name only. This film is a classic example of taking an established character, throwing him in a blender, ripping off equal parts Beast from 20,000 Fathoms in the Jurassic Park films, Raptorzillas. Really? Did you really think we would notice that? And throwing Ferris Bueller in on top of all of it. I think this flick single-handedly destroyed Matthew Broderick's career. The worm guy? Please. Toho reacted like a bull to a red flag and launched a new series of films known as the Millennium Series, with the first, Godzilla 2000, released in theaters in December of 1999, more than likely in a dire attempt to regain some respect for the franchise. As far as this stretch goes, the idea was to produce a series of films that were all individually contained. In other words, no relation to one another, save for the premise of being a direct sequel to the 1954 original. A slick concept, but the films themselves were overall pretty lukewarm with one exception. 2001's GMK, full title Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, Giant Monsters All-Out Attack, how's that for a mouthful, was produced by several of the team that gave us the 1990s Gamera series, more on that in a bit, and it was a superbly written twist on the Godzilla mythos, with elements of Japanese spirituality and cultural mores coming into play. As for the rest, all were pretty much standard fare. A lot of the fire had gone out of the series by this point. Films like Godzilla Against Megagorius, Another Round Against Mechagodzilla, and Tokyo SOS, while having some genuinely superb visuals and action sequences, offered little new under the sun. And then there's Godzilla Final Wars. Intended to be the last film in the series for at least a decade, released on Godzilla's 50th anniversary year, this one is a particularly odd mishmash of more kaiju than you can shake a stick at, karate, and live-action anime, not to mention the late Keith Emerson score with MTV music video-style camera angles, make this one of the wildest films of the series. And it nearly works. It has the flavor of a Destroy All Monsters remake, but it's just too disjointed and erratic to really work. Brave attempt, though. And to watch the real Godzilla take out Fraudzilla in less than 30 seconds was worth the price of admission alone. At the end of the film, Godzilla wanders off into the sea with his son, no less, hinting that, although it may be some time before he returns, he'd be back at one point or another, like any of us had any doubts. As a side note, a word or two here on the Gamera series. The Daily Company's answer and most direct competition to Godzilla, but far more kid-friendly, at least in its original run. You can say what you want about the series, but the Big Tortoise has made a good-sized impression himself on the genre. The original 1965 film, simply titled Gamera, saw the beast completely level Tokyo before being shot off into outer space in a rocket ship. Make of that what you will. Okay, whatever. The remaining series dealt with Gamera versus this or that monster, some more memorable than others, but with diminishing returns at the box office, with the original series dying a horrid death in 1980 with the atrocious Gamera Super Monster, which essentially was a rehash of the entire series via stock footage. I'll pass. Flash forward to the 1990s, and Daly resurrects the character in a far more mature and surprisingly original way, highlighting some amazing special effects for the time, and giving Toho a good run for their money in the process. Starting in 1995 with Gamera, Guardian of the Universe, and continuing with 1996's Attack of Legion and 1999's Advent of Iris, the trilogy went from strength to strength in plot, pacing, effects, and dynamics, with Iris being the crowning achievement of the series, still well worth investigating, if only for the incredibly bizarre and uniquely otherworldly appearances of both the Legion and Iris monsters. 2006 Gamera the Brave, which, while very kiddie-oriented, has some remarkable visuals and is well worth a look, just be prepared for an avalanche of schmaltz and cheese. A recent trailer announcing a new Gamera movie, slated for either this year or next, shows terrific promise, echoing the adult themes of the 1990s series, not to mention yet another update on one of Gamera's primary and most lauded opponents, Gaios, a sort of visual offshoot of Rodan. Now here is the kicker. Go back and watch any of the films featuring Gaios, particularly the 60s and 70s films, and then go back and watch the 2014 Godzilla picture by Legendary, and pay close attention to the male Muto creature, and try and tell me that this was not a direct lift. The resemblances are pretty strong. Speaking of which, Legendary's Godzilla has been well discussed and documented, so I won't reiterate it here. Released on Godzilla's 60th anniversary, this film is certainly flawed, but it's fun. Visually amazing, the biggest complaint everyone had that was Godzilla himself is barely on the screen for not much more than 12 minutes or so, with a lot of cutaways from the action sequences, which really deflated the excitement. I don't know, I dig the film, but it could have been a whole lot more. Bringing things current, Toho's Godzilla Resurgent hits Japan theaters July 29th of this year, while New World Pictures has announced that the film will be widely distributed in the United States. I've watched the trailer on YouTube so many times at this point, come on, who hasn't? And I must say, I'm both impressed and very hopeful. The new design has elements of the original concept, healthy doses of the 1995 Destroyer suit, and a look all its own, with a skin texture resembling that not unlike burning embers of a dying fire or flowing molten lava. And rumors prevail that Godzilla may be regenerating into a more classic look during the course of the film. In regards to legendary films, well, time will tell, won't it? With the director Edwards stepping down, a lot of big names have been bandied about to replace him, most notably Guillermo del Toro for Godzilla 2, and heavens to Murgatroyd, supposedly Stephen King for King Kong vs. Godzilla. But whatever becomes of it, I suspect we're in good hands. Do these behemoths have an impact on the haunt industry and haunters in general? I think so. You can see a lot of lists of some of the classic Toho creatures in haunted houses, and the nuclear theme, although it's been translated more for zombies nowadays, is still prevalent. And let's face it, Godzilla films weren't always about the beasts, it was more about the horror they related, and you can see a lot of that in quite a few haunts nowadays if you look carefully. And if you're really lucky, like I was when I was in my preteens, I actually got chased around the haunted house by a guy in a bloody Godzilla suit, believe it or not. Giant monsters have been on the upswing in recent years. Cloverfield, Pacific Rim, to name just a couple, and the Jurassic Park films have always had a heavy influence on the genre. Where's this all going to go? I don't think Godzilla's going anywhere anytime soon, and with effects improving by leaps and bounds yearly, who knows what's going to happen next. Go check out my blog spot, The Vicer's Halloween Haunt Journal, specifically the March 2014 entry titled All Hail Godzilla, a more personalized look at the King of the Monsters from my perspective. I wrote this a couple months prior to the 2014 film, and be forewarned, it is very photo-intensive and will take a while to download. Comments, questions, ideas you want to run by me? Drop me a line at ericbssh@gmail.com or look me up on Facebook. I'm easier to contact there, truth be told. Next time around on the Vista, we're going to start a two-part look into the life and publications of Forrest J. Ackerman, a.k.a. Uncle Forry himself, and the impact he's had on the horror, sci-fi, Halloween, and haunting communities at large. These will not necessarily run sequential, but I'll try to keep them published within a month of one another. Until then, always remember Svengoli's credo and brush your fangs, comb your face, drink your milk before it clots, bite Mama goodnight, and don't forget that I hid the body after Godzilla had way too much sake.
Oh, shut up.
Ain't gonna happen. See everybody next time.
CreepyCollection.com. The most disturbing, realistic, handmade props and animatronics for the horror industry. Now featuring FearFlex technology. Voted best zombie props of 2011 and 2012. CreepyCollection.com. For all your gore and more.
Hello, everybody. Drew Badger here. We are live, Charlotte, North Carolina, at the Mad Monster Party. We're hanging out with all the cool kids, all the vendors, all the celebrities. And, of course, you can't have Mad Monster or a lot of these conventions without some good old-fashioned rock and roll folks. You know, Ace Von Johnson's out here. You got Wednesday 13 out here.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him. You're right. He's a hack, I hear. But anyway... Yeah, more or less. But anyway, a gentleman that I have been watching on TV since college on a network that used to play music, ironically called MTV. If you remember Headbangers Ball, and if you're in my age demographic, you certainly do. Mr. Ricky Rockman, how are you doing, sir?
You know, my favorite dog was named Badger. I had a dog named Badger.
There's a connection already. I can see this. This is working.
He's dead now.
And, okay, just like my career. Anyway, it's good to have you here. First time at Mad Mo. Actually, I think you made an appearance last year.
Well, I came here last year just to visit Ace, but I wasn't, like, here behind anything. I just came here as a fan. And so this is my first time, you know, here signing, meeting people, and having fun.
How's it working out for you?
It's awesome. I mean, it's great. You know, I mean, I'm a fan of this type of genre, so it... You know, and get to see my friend Ace, so I'm having a good time.
And people are coming up to you saying, dude, flashing horns. I remember you back in the day, all the interviews, all that great stuff.
Yeah, I'm getting like really old people coming up and saying, I watched you when I was a little kid.
Hey.
So that dates. I wasn't saying you. But I was just saying, yeah, it dates you, and everybody's coming up, and they look like they're like a senior citizen. They're saying, dude, I watched you when I grew up. I'm like, oh, okay, thanks.
But, so it's a mixed blessing, I guess. Yeah. Hey, it's fans, great. But they're...
it's better than somebody saying Who.
Well, the Who rocked in its day, that's too. True. And they're still out there, so they what does are. That say about
and
us?
And they're older than me.
So anyway, let me ask you a question here. This, you say you are a fan of this genre. It does seem that there is an awful lot of connection between fans of metal and fans of horror films. Any particular reason you might think? I do ask this to a lot of
musicians. We like things, if you're into metal, punk rock, stuff like that, you like things that are a little bit on the edge. You like things that kind of are like adrenaline boosting. And when you see a horror film, it gets your heart beating. It does the same thing. You're not going to get the same reaction, you know, watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre as you are from Steel Magnolias. You know, one's going to get your heart beating. The same thing that listening to, you know, heavy music is going to give you not the same reaction that you're going to get listening to Adele. You know, so.
Yeah, but I want to have that same violent reaction when I see those kind of videos out there. But it's more like punching the TV and finding the remote.
Right. You got to let that go. You got to let it go.
My therapist does.
There's too much stuff to get mad at. You got to let it go sometimes.
My therapist gave me a ton of foam bricks, and I just get a really good arm workout. Just
there you go.
So what's going on with Ricky Rockman these days? You have moved to the East Coast.
I moved to North Carolina. I've lived here for a year. And which is crazy because I've lived in Hollywood my whole life. I grew up in Hollywood. So, you know, people usually in Hollywood say, oh, yeah, I'm going to go back home. And they visit like a place like North Carolina. And for me to say visit my home where I grew up is the Sunset Strip. I mean, you know, I had a job when I was 13 riding a moped as a delivery guy on the Sunset Strip. So now I live out here in the South and I love it. And I've been working doing the NASCAR radio show for 15 years. Getting ready for the Cat House 30th anniversary, so we're doing a bunch of stuff in Hollywood for that. And every summer I do these big motorcycle rides, which is, you can find out information on that on rickisride.com, RikiSride.com. And I go ride all over the place, and people tell me where to go on Twitter, and they say, hey, you should go to this place. And I'm going to start this year, I'm going to go from Mexico to Canada, and then from the West Coast to the East Coast.
Very nice. People tell me where to go all the time, too, but it's not motorcycle-related stuff.
No, I get the same thing, but this time it's a little bit better sometimes.
So what do you think about the Sunset Strip seems to be slowly, shall we say, declining just a little bit? You hear
it's not slowly declining. It's dead. Well, the Sunset Strip is gone. There is no, I mean, there are still bands that are out there playing, but it's not the same way as it was. You know, I'm hoping October 5th and 6th, when I bring the Cat House to the Whiskey and the Roxy, that it does feel more like the Sunset Strip did. The music scene's dead, and it's not the band's fault. It's the people's fault because they don't go out and support live music like they used to, you know?
Absolutely.
If everybody was watching videos on MTV, they'd still be showing videos. But now you can get any video you want on YouTube. So I still believe that if we did bring a show like Headbangers Ball back to MTV, it would do well. But, you know, I think people are just too comfortable just sitting down and looking at stuff on the internet, which is a shame.
What do you think of the current state of metal versus, say, back in, say, 1987?
You know, I think a lot of the bands now are heavier, and a lot of the bands don't want them to be called metal. People don't want to call a band like Avenged Sevenfold metal, but they are. I mean, I hear Avenged Sevenfold, and I hear Dio. I hear a little bit of Guns N' Roses in Avenged Sevenfold. You know, there's a lot of great bands that are newer bands, you know, like, you know, there's a lot of newer bands that I like. I mean, now when I call Lamb of God newer, they're not newer. They've been around for over
a decade.
So they're not newer. But there's a lot of the kids are liking the bands like, you know, Parkway Drive and stuff like that. That's heavier stuff. And I like that. And there's also a lot of bands that are playing just good old rock and roll, you know. So it's out there. You just have to search for it. But that's okay, too.
I asked this question to a couple of people like Don Jameson, and it's not an easy question to ask. It's 2035. Who gets inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame from this era?
It's a really easy question to ask. Foo Fighters, for one. Foo Fighters are a rock and roll band. Foo Fighters have always been playing rock and roll.
Are they the last great rock and roll band out there now?
They are one of the few bands I can see right now that could play 20 years from now and will still be selling out arenas. Because they get it. They're not dorks. I mean, it's not the heaviest stuff, but he loves that. I mean, he has always paid homage to Lemmy when Dave did Probot. You know, he represented Venom and stuff like that. I think Foo Fighters are one of the great rock and roll bands now. As far as metal, I just have to give it a little bit more thought.
I mean, you don't want to see a Justin Bieber in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
No,
nobody really does if you're anything other than a cool person. But it just seems that there's not that many. You know, there's Coldplay out there. As you said, there's Foo Fighters and there's bands like that. But who's coming up and coming nowadays that you think might still be around in 15 or 20 years? Maybe not selling out arenas, but still around there enough to qualify for that. As he is deep in thought here.
Yeah. Bands that I've seen recently that I think are just great bands that I think could... I mean, the only one that I really think comes to mind right now... Oh, okay, I'll tell you. You know who's really good is Hailstorm. Lizzie Hale is... I mean, I know I'm not mentioning metal bands, but Lizzie Hale's really a rock star.
Her name's been circulating to possibly fill in for AC/DC on a couple of the
tours.
Yeah,
so is Axl's.
Well, yeah, so, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but still.
I heard Ace Van Johnson's going to be the singer of AC/DC. But,
that hack. He's ignoring us.
I like them. I mean, some of the bands I like never are the bands that are going to stick around forever. You know, as far as the heavy stuff, you know, I really like Every Time I Die. They're not going to ever sell millions of records. I don't know.
It's a tough one, as I said. It's an easy question to ask. It sounds like it's going to be an easy answer, and then all you start thinking about, it's like, my God, really? What's
going to
happen?
If you asked me in 1986, is Guns N' Roses going to sell a million records, I'd say, hell no. You know, they're my friends that play the club. They're never going to sell millions of records.
Sure.
You know, so it depends.
A lot of times music tends to go in about a 20 to 30-year cycle. You know, the 50s were big in the 80s, et cetera, and that. Do you see a resurgence of, say, hair metal or anything like that? They've got the hair metal channel on satellite radio, and, you know, these, shall we say, reunion tours of Poison and Cinderella and bands like that seem to do great on the summer arena circuit, but you don't hear about them in February. But, you know, do you think that's just hopefully going to have an uptick or not going to happen?
I think kids are going to realize people like Tom Kiefer. Oh, sorry, I'm spitting mints at you when I talk.
That's okay.
I think people are going to realize that people like Tom Kiefer are really incredible artists and not think of him as like he was a singer of a hair band. So
they were a blues band with distortion and spandex.
They're phenomenal. Tom is phenomenal.
Opened up for him in 2003. You know?
Yeah, they're great. They played. I did a Cat House show last year and I had Kiefer play. He was really, really good. I don't know. I think people are going to start to rediscover some of the older stuff that stands the test of time. There's a lot of stuff back then that I think sucks. There's a lot of stuff on that Hair Nation station I'm not a big fan of.
Sure.
You know, because I like a little bit of the heavier stuff. But there's still some good stuff.
Excellent. So where can people get more information about the Cat House or Ricky Rockman in general now that he's not living in a Sunset Strip? Do you have any upcoming tours any things like that?
October 1st, Cat House is going to be on the Monsters of Rock Cruise. October 5th, Cat House is going to be at the Whiskey. October 6th, we're going to be at the Roxy. And if you go to cathousehollywood.com, which is a new website, that's keeping update with everything. And you can follow my ride at rickysride.com. I'm on Twitter at Ricky Rackman. But just go to cathousehollywood.com. That's easier to remember.
Ricky Rackman, it's an honor to finally speak with you, as I said, as one of those long-haired metal hair guys back in the day that never made it big. You know, it's an honor to finally see somebody that I always looked up to. Once again, Drew Badger here at the Mad Monster Party in Charlotte for the Big Scary Show. And we are out. Tired of surfing all over the web to find the latest haunt news? Why sift through hours of those VideoTube channels trying to find the latest how-to videos? Isn't there an easier way? Of course there is! Introducing HauntersDigest.com. With HauntersDigest.com, just one click will put a world of haunt information at your fingertips. From the latest news, to vendor information, to video tutorials. And don't forget the soon-to-be world-famous Haunt Brief, which takes a deeper look into many aspects of the industry. There's even a directory of over 800 haunted attractions, so you can find the right one for you. Still not convinced? There's even columns written by many experts in the industry covering a wide range of topics. Rumor has it a certain member of a particular podcast might even write for HauntersDigest.com. As an extra bonus, you can follow them on Twitter and Facebook. For more information, visit www.hauntersdigest.com today.
Bad Jack Productions, Sanctuary of the Damned, on the Big Scary Show.
As we slide back into the swamp where we hid the body, we would like to thank the following people. Screamline Studios, ScreamlineStudios.com. Necrotic Creations, NecroticCreations.com. HauntPay at HauntPay.com. Von Charon Productions, that's V-O-N-C-H-A-R-O-N Productions, VonCharon.com. Dark Spectre Custom Couture. Creepy Collection. Darkest Fears Unlimited. And Virgil Franklin, Master of the Ether Muse. We would also like to thank the Forga hosts, including Storm. Check out his rants and more at HauntMinute.com. The Unknown Scare Actor, Actor Trainer, and Traveling Actor Troupe. Find out more about Maul at MaulMonsters.com. That's M-A-U-L Monsters.com. The Hauntstrumentalist, Jerry Vane. Check out his latest CD, Circus of Nightmares, at JerryVane.com. Drew Badger, Actor Trainer, Consultant, and more, RabbitBadger.biz. You can leave us feedback at BigScaryShow.com. If you have any news, news@BigScaryShow.com. Check out our Facebook page at Facebook.com/BigScaryShow. And Twitter, @TheBigScaryShow, where we just may tweet some info you won't hear anywhere else. You can also search for us on iTunes and Stitcher. To keep up with all the latest news and info, you can always find us at BigScaryShow.com. And thank you for listening. Without you, we are nothing.
The Big Scary Show is copyright Big Scary Show, LLC, and no rebroadcast of this show may be made without express permission of the owners. All music used on The Big Scary Show is used with expressed permission of the artists themselves.